Hey everybody, this is Sound Off 112 here on SCScoops.com for Sunday, June 13, 2010. I am Solomonster here with you. Thank you, as always, for downloading the podcast. Quick note here at the beginning, I just want to mention it's on the Twitter page, but we are now on Facebook. Sound Off is on Facebook. Actually, you can find The Solomonster. It's actually spelled The Solomonster with two E's because The Solomonster with one E was taken. The quickest way to get there, though, is simply by going to facebook.com/thesolomonster with one E, and it will take you to the page. You can friend me, and we've got some lively discussions and debates already going on the page, so definitely check that out. That is the official Solomonster page on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolomonster, and then from there you can actually find a link specifically to a Solomonster Sounds Off fan page. So those of you social media freaks out there will get your kicks on the Facebook page. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. I'll mention it again later on and plug it a whole bunch of times, so you can expect that. Now, a lot going on this past week. trying to figure out where to start, so I guess what we'll do here, we'll start from the beginning. Obviously, I've got a couple of thoughts on some of the things that have happened in this very unique and interesting week. More specifically in WWE, although TNA is kind of getting in on the party now, with Dixie Carter mentioning that there's a couple of big surprises coming up for TNA. But again, we'll get to that a little bit later on. Let's go back to Raw this past Monday night. This was a three-hour edition of Raw, which are becoming more and more painful to sit through, although thankfully, I did not have to sit through the entire show. I mentioned I was out. I actually didn't make it home until hour number three, and it was probably for the better. I'm not even going to bother recapping everything that happened in the first 2.5 hours. It was basically, from the sounds of it, and I went back, I watched some of it on YouTube, and some of it, I admit, I just didn't watch at all. Sounds like an absolute abortion of a show. Yes, an abortion. Now, in hindsight being what it is, given what we were given at the end of the show, the argument that has been made by some is perhaps the show was intentionally made to look bad, so that the final segment on the show would be even more jarring, which it was. And that may well be true, but then again, we've had plenty of three-hour Raws with hokey comedy and short, shitty wrestling matches. I don't know why you would want to chase people away and alienate your audience like that, but whatever, teach their own. Raw sucked the first 2.5 hours. And then we got a main event. Now remember, this was an edition of Raw where the fans were allowed to vote on the matches they wanted to see. The first ever Viewer's Choice, or Taboo Tuesday edition of Raw on a Monday, if you will. That concept, of course, failed horribly on pay-per-view, so it makes sense to do it for free on Raw maybe once or twice a year. Given the results of this first show, if they never did one again, I'd be perfectly fine with that. Some of the choices made by the fans were questionable. For example, voting Kali and Hornswoggle in to challenge the Hart Dynasty for the tag team titles. And by all accounts, by the way, the voting, for those who have asked, was legit. I think many people in WWE likely, as I did, expected Rey Mysterio, for example, to run away with the voting in the main event, and he would face John Cena. That did not happen. The main event was John Cena against the choice of either Rey Mysterio, Jack Swagger, or CM Punk. And really, you can make an argument that Mysterio and Swagger were probably the favorites there, more so than Punk. If you vote Swagger in, you have a champion versus champion match, but what do you know? The titles don't mean shit, so nobody cares about that anymore. And I guess people just didn't want to see the babyface John Cena against the babyface Rey Mysterio, so they voted CM Punk in, I believe, by a 45% margin. I think Rey got like 32. Swagger came in third. So out comes Punk, and we have a John Cena-CM Punk match, which I believe on commentary, either Lawler or Michael Cole at one point quipped that this was the first ever meeting between them, which, you know, it bugs the shit out of me whenever they do that and they're blatantly lying. This was not the first John Cena-CM Punk match, although I wouldn't mind seeing an actual program between the two of them. That they have not had. Whatever. It was an okay match. It was any regular Raw main event, up until the point that Wade Barrett, of course the winner of NXT Season 1, comes walking out to the ring, and that's when things got interesting. Now, we all know by now what happened. Wade Barrett walks to the ring to distract Cena, and we see Michael Tarver and all the other NXT Season 1 rookies jump out of the crowd and start beating the shit out of Luke Gallows on the outside, and then CM Punk. Serena ran away. Crowd's going crazy. And then they surround the ring. The rookies get into the ring. David Otunga knocks out the referee. John Cena, of course, goes after Barrett, gets his ass handed to him in an 8-on-1 assault. Some of the rookies leave the ring. They beat up Matt Stryker. They beat up Jerry Lawler. Michael Cole runs for the hills. It was just total destruction, chaos, carnage, and pandemonium at ringside. And no commentary for the last 10 minutes or so of the show, which I thought was just great. It added a lot to that segment. And again, I'm not a big fan of the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler team anyway, so I thought that aspect of it was great. There were actually a lot of aspects to this angle that I loved. Little things that I know some of you noticed, maybe a lot of people wouldn't, maybe younger viewers, but, you know, for example, in the middle of this attack on John Cena, in the midst of everything that's going on, they're tearing apart the ring, they're tearing apart the dasher boards and the barricades, they're throwing around the chairs. For the first time that I can ever remember in WWE history, we actually got to see the wooden boards under the ring. You know, we've seen them do gimmicks before in stunts where people go through the ring, you know, just maybe see some of the padding underneath, but I never actually saw the wooden portion of the ring. That was different. CM Punk comes out of nowhere in the middle of the attack on Cena, not necessarily to save Cena, but because, of course, he was attacked and he's just trying to get some of his, and they beat him down. But him being such a hated heel, it's just something we're not used to seeing in WWE. It truly felt like an invasion angle done right. And there were just lots of little things about it that I loved. You know, I did think it was a little weird watching Black Cena clothesline White Cena. Of course, Black Cena being Darren Young. It's just uncanny how they look alike. But anyway, one of my favorite parts of this whole angle, which may be a moot point now, and I'll get to that in a second, but was Bryan Danielson, or Daniel Bryan, as it were, yelling at Cena, "You're not better than me, you're not better than me," and then spitting in his face, which was apropos almost, because I remember an angle, actually it wasn't even an angle on TV, it was a dark match, at a SmackDown taping back in 2003. You may recall that John Cena, when he you know, first grew into the gimmick and was a heel, had a brief feud with Brock Lesnar. This was right after Brock won the Undisputed Championship from Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 19, or the WWE Championship. And the very next month at Backlash, they had a Lesnar-Cena match. So back then, during the 2002-2003, SmackDown would air a satellite feed, and a lot of times people would pick up on that satellite feed and would upload video online of some of the post-show dark matches and some of the post-show and pre-show stuff that they would do. And I still have video of this somewhere. I remember Cena was there. This was not airing on TV. He called out Brock. Him and Brock went face-to-face in the middle of the ring, and I'll never forget it. You could kind of tell Brock told Cena to go for it, and Cena just kind of backs up a little bit and hocks a huge loogie. Right? I mean, these guys were maybe 5 inches apart, face-to-face, and he just spits right in Brock's face, and you knew Cena was going to get his ass beaten down, and he did. It's disgusting, it's gross, but it always gets that reaction from the crowd, like, oh shit, something bad's about to go down. And, you know, to see Bryan Danielson in a main event angle on Monday Night Raw amidst all of this destruction spit right in the face of John Cena and essentially everything that Cena represents in WWE was just phenomenal. Of course, the very green and inexperienced Michael Tarver doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. After Bryan spits in Cena's face and is getting ready to kick him in the head, before he can get the kick, as he's going to kick Cena, instead of just kind of backing off, Michael Tarver comes over and goes to punch Cena, and you can see Bryan Danielson was kind of backing him off, going, "Get the fuck back." Kick Cena right in the head. Great stuff. Great stuff. And seemingly Danielson and Wade Barrett both being positioned as leaders of this NXT Renegade faction. I love every aspect of this angle at the end of the show. You can ask the questions of why didn't anybody come out to save John Cena, to represent WWE. I will say this much. It didn't bother me that much. We used to see this all the time with the NWO. But the one thing I would have done, I would have had Evan Bourne run out there and get his ass beaten down. You know, Evan Bourne getting his ass beaten down by 8 guys doesn't hurt him. Again, it just kind of picks up on the week before when he got that big push. Him running out of the middle of this big angle to try to save John Cena would have really kind of put him back in people's minds. Whereas I think with this whole NXT thing, Evan Bourne really took a back seat. But yet we saw him backstage just before this kind of talking to Cena. I would have thought that at least he would have run out there, but he didn't. Apparently John Cena has no friends backstage in WWE. I know there are people who legitimately think he's a kiss-ass, which he may well be, but nonetheless, I love this. This was a great, great, great angle. I don't see how you could not like it. If nothing else, it was unpredictable. For a change, it felt fresh. If you weren't paying attention to Raw, maybe half-ass paying attention, if you were doing dishes or cleaning, you know, whatever you were doing, you perked up and took notice of what was going on if you had this on TV in the background. You were calling a friend, you were sending a text message. This was, you know, in some ways very reminiscent of the things we used to see 10, 12 years ago. It was nice. And what makes it even better to me is it wasn't just a group of kind of older veterans like the NWO. And don't get me wrong, the NWO stuff was great. It was fine. And I don't think it would have gotten over had you not had people like Hulk Hogan in that group. But what's great about this is, as inexperienced as they may be, these are potentially your future stars here. These are the rookies that you need to get over. Again, I talked about it last week. The roster overall has never been as thin at the top as it is right now. You've got people retiring. You have people getting injured left and right. Triple H is making movies. So at least it's an attempt to not only get a hot angle going, but you're going to hopefully get a couple of these guys over, and maybe you'll make a couple of stars. Maybe it's just Wade Barrett and Bryan Danielson, or at least so we thought. Now, watching this angle, one of the things that jumped out at me was how intense it was. It felt real, it felt unpredictable, and there were certain things that happened. For example, at one point, Bryan Danielson is beating up ring announcer Justin Roberts and begins choking him with his necktie. Now, literally, I went back and watched it. This particular scene was maybe on camera for all of 3 or 4 full seconds, 5 at the most. But they did, you know, the cameraman got a good shot of it, and he moved on. And nobody, I think, really even thought anything of it. Now, I was out on Friday and didn't get home until very, very late. I was ready to just come home and just collapse in my bed. 5 o'clock in the morning, and I decided to go check Twitter, some of your replies on my phone, and I find a couple of tweets about Daniel Bryan being released, and that woke me right up. And I said, shit, I've got to go online and find out what's going on. And I just couldn't believe what I was reading. I thought maybe the alcohol had not yet worn off, but apparently it's quite legit. What happened, here's the latest on this whole thing, from a couple of different, you know, websites and people who would know, and even they, quite frankly, are a little bit stunned and not quite sure what's going on. But by and large, this does not appear to be a work. This is legit. He was really released from his contract. Bryan Danielson was really fired by WWE. Now, you know, at first there were reports going around that it was because he choked Justin Roberts with the necktie, and that probably is what did him in. But basically, from what I can gather, there was somebody who got very upset with what they saw on Monday night, and not just Bryan choking Roberts, but just the whole angle. They were very put off by it. Who this person is, nobody seems to know. The speculation, is it Linda McMahon? Is it somebody from her campaign? They're worried about, you know, making her look bad as she runs for the Senate. Is it somebody from the Mattel toy company? You know, one of the new partners for WWE. That was a big, big, big deal that they landed with that company. And, you know, again, WWE, I'm sure, had to have made promises to certain people when they signed these deals that their product would not cross certain boundaries. Because let's be honest, wrestling built up not such a great reputation over the years. As great as the Attitude Era was, they did a lot of stuff that a lot of companies frowned upon, and that's why they didn't have a lot of big corporate sponsors. Now they do, or at least they're trying to. And Mattel is a big deal. So some people think Mattel. Somebody at Mattel saw this, called WWE, and forced Vince McMahon's hand. By all accounts, Vince McMahon was not bothered by this. In fact, when the angle was over on Monday and the rookies went backstage, they were praised. They were lauded for their efforts. Everybody seemed to love the way that angle came off. And again, you know, Bryan Danielson was part of another smaller invasion angle on an FCW house show in Florida this week. He was right in the middle of it. Everything was cool beans. Nothing was wrong. And it was a situation where this was not a Vince McMahon call. I mean, ultimately, Vince McMahon made the decision, okay, we've got to let him go, but this was not Vince McMahon's decision. He did not want to do this. So, of course, the big mystery now is who bitched, who complained, and basically got one of the best wrestlers in the company fired. It's a shitty situation. It fucking sucks. I don't agree with it at all. I think if you have to do something, if you must show some muscle and show that you're not going to tolerate that type of behavior, There's a million different things that you can do. For example, if I'm Vince McMahon and I'm feeling pressure to do something, I suspend Bryan Danielson, maybe without pay, for 30 days, 60 days, whatever the case may be. Punish him or reprimand him in some way, give him a warning, suspend him. Why do you have to fire the guy? No warning at all, no provocation, just fired, gone, released from his contract, and I'm assuming that he has a 90-day clause, so he can't exactly run to TNA or Ring of Honor right away. Certainly not TNA. So that don't expect to see him at Slammiversary this weekend or anything like that. I was so angry when I read this, and I'm still angry. Now, this doesn't ruin the angle. It does not ruin the angle. You know, I'm still anxious to see how the NXT stuff plays out this Monday night. But in my opinion, it severely, severely hurts it. Because, let's be honest, Danielson was the one person. Wade Barrett won the competition, and he was clearly being positioned as at least one of the leaders, if not the leader of this group. Bryan Danielson is really the person that entire first season was centered around. The stuff with him and Michael Cole in recent weeks was some of the best stuff on WWE television. If this were Heath Slater or Darren Young or Skip Sheffield, this wouldn't be as big of a deal. Of all people for this to happen to, of all people to make a scapegoat, and yes, he is a scapegoat, there's no doubt about it. For Bryan Danielson to be that person, it just could not be any worse. Of all the people. I mean, when I first read this news, I thought to myself, I couldn't even figure out what happened. He has a reputation as being a very straight-laced guy. He's not involved with drugs or anything like that. He's not a cancer in the locker room. He doesn't misbehave. He doesn't go out carousing and partying all night long, doing things that he shouldn't do, building a bad reputation for himself. He's just the opposite. In fact, he's built up a reputation as being somewhat boring. He's a vegan. He doesn't have a television. Why would he be fired? So that was my first thought when I read the news. And once I found out the reason, I was even more confused and upset because there's no reason for it. Suspend him. Don't fire him. I want to know who bitched. That's what I want to know. Was it Mattel? Was it Linda? Was it somebody else? All we know right now is that it was somebody outside the company. It was not some higher up within WWE. It was certainly not Vince McMahon. It was not one of the agents. This was not a political assassination from within. It was not Triple H or anything like that. It was somebody on the outside. Who it was, I'm sure we'll find out in due time, but right now we just don't know. But all I know is 10 years ago, 12 years ago, this never would have happened. And this is the price you pay when you have a publicly traded company and you have stockholders to answer to and you have corporate sponsors whose ass you need to kiss. And that's the unfortunate part about it. I get why they're doing it, but I don't like it. You know, WWE made money hand over fist in the late 90s when they were rocking the wrestling world. And this was right before even they went public, which was in August, as I recall, of 1999 is when they first went public. And they were making a lot of money back then. They were doing very well for themselves. Of course, wrestling got hot, and wrestling is not hot right now. And in many respects, because wrestling is not as popular as it was 10 years ago, they're very fortunate to have some of these deals with these partners that they have. Otherwise, they'd be doing far worse. They're certainly not hurting for cash right now. And I know the Mattel deal is a big deal to them. You know, and maybe it wasn't somebody from Mattel. But if it was, or whoever it was, I just think the whole situation sucks. That Vince McMahon has essentially been castrated. You know, those grapefruits we heard about over a decade ago. It seems like somebody has taken a hammer to the old grapefruits. You remember the old Gallagher act with the watermelon? That would be the equivalent of Gallagher basically taking a hammer and smashing Vince McMahon's grapefruits on stage in front of everybody. I hope people sitting in the front row have plastic they could cover themselves up with. Just a shitty situation all around. Danielson will be fine. I mean, he'll probably go back to Ring of Honor, I would imagine. He'll do independence. He'll be able to do what he does best under his real name. Seemingly, the door is open for him to come back to WWE. The people there like him. Vince McMahon genuinely likes him. They were giving him a push. So as I understand it, the door is open. Would not be shocking at all for him to be back within 6 months or a year. But if this is legit, and again, I don't know for sure. I'm not sitting here saying that this is definitely not a work. But think about it. What purpose does it serve if it's a work? Here's the thing I don't understand. We were told that the winner of NXT gets a pay-per-view title shot, essentially gets a contract to be a WWE superstar. We were never told that the other NXT rookies were signed to contracts. You know, and WWE put an announcement on their website essentially saying that they have come to terms on the release of Daniel Bryan, and they put his real name in parentheses next to it from his contract. So if this is a work, it's a pretty shitty work because it doesn't make any sense. Why would you come out and admit that he was signed to a contract when, in storyline, he's not supposed to be signed to a contract? It doesn't make sense. Just like it doesn't make sense that somebody on the outside would think this angle is too violent for WWE television and they would complain about it when less than a year ago, in fact, in September, at Unforgiven, there was a... I don't even remember the stipulation. It was a stip match between John Cena and Randy Orton. It was the match where Orton handcuffed Cena to the post outside the ring and took a Singapore cane to him over and over and over again, which at the time I thought was the most violent thing I had seen on WWE television in years. You could see the welts on Cena's body. It was pretty brutal stuff. Now, granted, it was on pay-per-view and not USA Network, but so what? I didn't hear anybody complain back then. What makes this angle so special? That somebody's feathers would get ruffled that way. Maybe it was somebody from the USA Network that complained. I don't know. All I know is whoever complained, my only hope is that WWE does not get gun-shy now. Because if they were upset with the entire angle, and it came off too real, too violent, there were kids watching, then basically this will turn into what I hope it does not turn into, which was just a one-week hot angle that leads to absolutely nothing. You know, they tried to do a version of the NXT invasion on Tuesday night during episode 1 of season 2 of NXT, which I watched. And it was shit. I mean, that show closing angle where the pros attacked all the new rookies came off like any other lame, fake, hokey attack or angle that WWE would do on television, which is the complete opposite of how the angle on Monday night played out. But if they're just going to revert back to doing their usual scripted, predictable bullshit, then this served no purpose whatsoever. You know, and years from now, we'll watch footage of it on YouTube, and we'll get all excited, just like I still watch footage on occasion of the one-night invasion that took place when all the ECW guys united with Paul Heyman on Raw and beat up the WWE guys, and everybody was so happy and thought that we were going to get a three-way feud with WWF, WCW, and ECW, and an hour later, I remember it like it was yesterday, July 9th, 2001. An hour later, at the end of the show, we see the WCW guys and the ECW guys unite under their new owner, Stephanie McMahon. The new owner of ECW, Stephanie McMahon. Angle, in the garbage. Done. Finished. I was not a big fan of the Alliance and the Invasion angle after that. Hopefully they'll handle this a little bit better. Their track record with this sort of thing is not that sterling. And certainly the Bryan Danielson news puts a big, big damper on things. I'm anxious to see how this plays out on Monday night. Hell, if he comes walking out on Raw Monday night, great. We were all fooled. All I'm saying is you're fooling yourself. Because they've told people within the company higher up, they've told their own creative team that Danielson is gone. Don't book for him. They've told the production people he's gone. They've told everybody. Legal people, merchandise people, everybody. They've told them he's gone. What purpose does that serve if you're just fooling everybody? And then you foster this sense of distrust among your employees. Doesn't make sense. So, looks legit, sounds legit, probably is legit, and it's still a shitty situation. I don't really have anything else to say about it. I'm sure Bryan Danielson will be in a position where you know, he's coming off a hot angle where he beat up the WWE champion and spit in his face. And I'm sure he'll do just well for himself on the independent circuit. But he deserves a shot on the grand stage. And I think he was taking full advantage of it. He's a scapegoat. He was, you know, Bret Hart for years would say, I was screwed. This truly is a situation where Bryan Danielson can say that he was screwed. And I think that sucks. Maybe we can get somebody on the outside to start complaining about the all the shitty comedy that WWE does. Maybe they'll stop doing that. One more thing about Raw Monday Night. Matt Hardy made an appearance as well. They did an angle where Drew McIntyre came out, and they ran a poll, and they let the fans vote on who Drew's opponent would be, and there was one mystery opponent who, of course, they made very obvious was Matt Hardy. And Matt came out, and it was a good night for Matt. I think it was more so just continuing the demotion for Drew McIntyre, who's built up a reputation as being a bit of a diva and very high maintenance, hence why he lost the Intercontinental Championship. He's been losing left and right. You know, he's in the proverbial doghouse for now, and I think it's just more a situation of embarrassing him than putting Matt Hardy over. But Matt beat him clean, and then, of course, Matt is playing this gimmick now, even off camera on his Twitter and these YouTube videos. He's, you know, where he's going crazy. It's like his, you know, his alternate personality. He's obsessed with going after Drew McIntyre and ridding him from WWE. And when the match was over, he was going after Drew, beating him up. He pushed the referee away. He ripped some of Drew's hair out of his head. And at one point, I don't know how many of you caught this, he actually put the hair in his mouth. And the only thing I could think of at that point was, God damn, this guy is so fat, he's eating Drew's hair now, too. Matt's got to get on a treadmill or something. But whatever, I have some sympathy for him. You know, him and Edge are the two that jump out at me. I'm not making any insinuations. All I'm saying is there's a wellness policy in place now for a reason. And some of these physiques are not nearly what they used to be. But hey, you know, hair can have some, I suppose hair can have some nutritional value. So if that floats Matt Hardy's boat, then by all means, let him dine on some hair. Now, the TNA announcement, poor TNA, up until the end of the week, they were just completely lost. Nobody was talking about TNA at all, except maybe Dixie Carter on her Twitter. TNA kind of fell off the face of the earth. They're in a downward spiral of their own right now. They're just stuck in a muck, going nowhere, with the same people in power. It's just, you know, it's like Groundhog Day every day. But Dixie Carter did manage to make some waves by the end of the week and put TNA's name back in the wrestling news. Essentially, she has teased on her Twitter page, you know, as opposed to doing this on her TV show. She does it on Twitter. Teasing a surprise for Slammiversary, which is this Sunday. What this surprise is, I would imagine it's a new talent coming in. Who that may be, I don't know. It's not Bryan Danielson, I can tell you that much. But I guess we'll wait and see exactly what the surprise is. More so than that, she has started over the last 2 or 3 days teasing a bigger surprise that will not be revealed at the pay-per-view this weekend, but in the next couple of weeks, people will find out what it is. It's something that will change the course of TNA history, will rock the wrestling world, all the hyperbole you can think of. And TNA does not exactly have a track record of any great significance when it comes to these big life-altering surprises, and neither does WWE. I mean, when you go over the top with the hype, it usually never lives up to it. I mean, even if it was the announcement of a new creative change, the way that she's built this thing up, you would think that TNA was coming to ABC and Donald Trump had bought TNA, and that sure as shit has not happened. So I don't know what the announcement is. I would just tone the hype down a little bit. But she sounds very excited about it. She says she hasn't been sleeping much. She's got butterflies in her stomach. She just put on her Twitter earlier today that she had a meeting with some TNA people and brought one or two more people in on the big secret announcement that nobody else in the company seems to know about. So I guess we'll see. We'll see what it is. I know, from what I understand, they've had discussions with certain people like Paul Heyman and the former Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, recently about potentially coming in to lead the creative charge in TNA, which would be great. I can't speak for Sullivan. I'm not all that familiar with his body of work from a booking perspective. I know he did some booking in WCW, but you know, Paul Heyman certainly would certainly shake things up in TNA if they gave him full reign and control. I don't think they have the balls to do that. But by all accounts, Heyman is probably not coming in, at least not right now. So what this big surprise is, I don't know. Apparently it's not a name change, it's not new ownership, and it's probably not a network TV deal. I'm guessing, because we would have probably heard about that by now, but you know, maybe it is. What network would pick up TNA? For God's sake, what network would want to get in bed with TNA? When have they proven themselves a worthy television commodity? Their ratings have gone down. So I doubt very seriously that we'll be seeing TNA on NBC or Fox anytime soon. So we'll just have to be patient. Dixie, I'm sure, will continue the hype. But at least TNA managed to get themselves back in the news, because like I said before, they were just, the NXT angle stirred people up so much. It was all about NXT, and TNA just got completely buried in the shuffle, and yet they have a pay-per-view this Sunday that nobody will buy. But if it makes them feel any better, WWE has a pay-per-view next weekend that nobody will buy either. So I will be there. I did not know the card when I bought these tickets to the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view at the Nassau Coliseum. This may be one of the worst promoted pay-per-views since The Bash last year. And maybe that December to Dismember pay-per-view that did, I think, the lowest buy rate in WWE pay-per-view history. This one may not be the worst, but it may well rank in the top five. The promotion for this pay-per-view has been just absolute shit. I'm not a fan of the Fatal 4-Way concept. Making a pay-per-view out of it just sounds bad. I bought the tickets because, you know, when they bring a pay-per-view to town, and I'm in New York, so maybe in New York they'll bring more pay-per-views here than they would, say, in the Midwest or something. But even in New York, you know, it's not like we're getting pay-per-views every year. I've been to a couple of WWE pay-per-views. They're usually fun. It's a lot more enjoyable to be there live than it is to watch on pay-per-view. And so I'm looking forward to it. But the show itself, they've got two matches announced. And it's the two Fatal 4-Way matches. One for the WWE Championship with John Cena, Randy Orton, who has a bum shoulder, Edge, and Sheamus. And, of course, the other one for the world title, Jack Swagger defending against The Big Show, CM Punk, and Rey Mysterio, who will be replacing the vegetative Undertaker. So that's it. That's all that they've announced. And so I guess on the go-home show a couple of days before, they'll throw a couple of more matches on there that don't mean anything. Maybe they'll do something with the NXT guys. I don't know. But these next 2 weeks, on paper anyway, these two pay-per-views coming up do not look very good at all. And certainly after the Fatal 4-Way show on that next weekend's podcast, I'll have my live thoughts from the Fatal 4-Way show. I also saw the NXT show from this past Tuesday with the new class of rookies, and I saw most of it, I should say. Percy Watson seems pretty funny. I could see he was already getting over. The crowd was really getting behind him on Tuesday. Again, Joe Hennig calling himself Michael McGillicuddy. It's just stupid. My NXT rant last week speaks for itself. Alex Riley, Joe Hennig, Percy Watson. Even Husky Harris, who has the worst name of the bunch, and certainly does not fit the stereotypical prototype of a WWE physique, which I think is fine. I mean, I said that when Trevor Murdoch was in the company. He was a good worker who looked different and ultimately got released. Hopefully Husky Harris will not have that same fate. He's got some personality. He looks different. He stands out. There's nothing wrong with that. Eli Cottonwood, to me, is almost... he's an American version of the Great Khali. Body type wise, the hair, I mean, he looks similar to Khali to me, only he can speak better English. That's not a good thing, by the way. That's not a compliment. But like I said, I'm not too worried about getting a Husky Harris against Eli Cottonwood WrestleMania main event anytime soon. But we'll see who comes out of this class. Usually there's probably one or two people that will stand out. Hennig has the pedigree. We'll see what kind of worker he really is. The best worker of the bunch is probably Caval, the former Low Ki on the independent circuit, or Sen Shi in TNA. He's the best worker of the bunch, the most experienced, 30 years of age, and also the smallest. And played for comedy, of course, pairing him up with Le Cool. Maybe it'll be entertaining. And, you know, again, we weren't very fond of how Bryan Danielson was used with that losing streak. I don't know why they thought putting him on a losing streak would get him over, but they did. And ultimately, with the Michael Cole stuff and everything, he started to get over, and then, of course, he got his ass fired. So as long as Caval doesn't go around choking people with neckties, I think he'll be okay. By the way, that brings up another thought. Somebody emailed me. We'll get to the mailbag in a second, but one of you guys emailed me with a very good thought, a very good thing that you pointed out to me, as it relates to the whole choking issue, and some people may be reminded of Chris Benoit, and maybe that had something to do with it. If that's the case, I seem to remember the feud, which actually was not very good, but the feud with Chris Jericho a couple of months after he came back, and JBL. This would have been at the 2008 Royal Rumble. I was actually there live, now that I think about it, at Madison Square Garden, and it was a pretty brutal match. There was a lot of blood. Of course, this was before the blood edict came down. And at the end of the match, I recall Jericho choking the life out of JBL with a long camera cable. So again, this would have been about 6 or 7 months after the Chris Benoit situation went down. So again, I don't want to get back on that rant again, but it just pisses me off every time I think about it. There's tons of stuff you could point to that this company has done, and just to scapegoat this one guy and whatever. But I just want to say it was a good point that person brought up. I had not thought about that, and yet I was at that show live. So, you know, what does that say about me? Raw this Monday, normal standard 2-hour edition. Thank God. Mark Feuerstein, the star of the TV show Royal Pains, will be on the show. I don't know if Big Show will be on with him. I think he will be, because Big Show is going to be appearing on an episode of Royal Pains in the next couple of weeks on USA. I think Big Show may be there, maybe co-hosting with him. If they play it for comedy, that's fine. Big Show is actually a really funny guy. I'm looking forward to his comedy Knucklehead, which is coming out, I believe, in August. But again, how much do you want to play the Big Show for comedy 6 days before he fights for the World Heavyweight Championship? These are the things that you need to balance. And I guess we'll see how they handle it on Monday. The guest host last week, Quentin Rampage Jackson, being used the way he was in character as B.A. Baracus from the A-Team movie. This was such an abomination how they used him on Monday. I mean, there's really nothing more for me to say. You know, again, I'm not expecting them to put this UFC guy over their WWE guys and have him beat up a whole bunch of wrestlers, even though that's kind of what he did. He gave somebody a spine buster and a choke slam. But, you know, when you have these guys in character, it just... We already know we're watching a fake wrestling show. We don't need to be beaten over the head with it. And I just hate it. I hate it when they do this with these guest hosts. They've done this before. It's a waste of time. And it just makes your product look bad. And I know Quentin had a lot of fun. He grew up a wrestling fan. He grew up a Jerry Lawler fan. So doing an angle with him was pretty cool. He was raving on his Twitter about it. But I just think the way they used him and you know... Bradley Cooper had the right idea, coming out there to do one quick segment. He probably looked at the rest of the script and said, fuck this shit, I'm not going out there and doing this, and he left. I don't know that for a fact, but if I were him, that's what I would have done. So, you know, we'll see. Mark Feuerstein this week, I think the week after is Rob Zombie. I don't know. I don't care. Who could possibly care? Survivor Series is back as well. There was a commercial that started airing during Raw Monday night that talked about Survivor Series tickets. So apparently the Survivor Series has been replaced with the Survivor Series. Obviously they had second thoughts about the name change and came to their senses. I mean, I know that when Vince McMahon first made the announcement a couple months ago, they claimed that the Survivor Series concept was obsolete. It had outgrown its life expectancy or whatever terminology he used. And I will admit that the concept of Survivor Series is dated. They have not exactly stayed true to it the way it used to be 15, 20 years ago. But it was bullshit. Promoting a John Cena, Triple H, Shawn Michaels triple threat match and playing it for comedy where the midget was the focal point of it is not going to sell pay-per-views. And they apparently didn't realize that going into it. That's why the show did so badly. So, Survivor Series is coming back. I'm fine with that. I've always advocated incorporating the War Games concept into the Survivor Series. I don't think they're going to do that. I'm sure if they did a War Games match, you'd have people from the outside complaining about how violent it is. But if I were running WWE, and clearly I'm not, I would get rid of the Survivor Series elimination concept altogether and... highlight the event each year with a 5-on-5 Raw vs. SmackDown War Games match. Two rings, two cages, or one giant cage around the two rings. I think that concept would make money, quite frankly. Instead of having all these standalone gimmick pay-per-views, Fatal 4-Way, Money in the Bank, you know, coming soon, WWE single match. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous. But good to see the Survivor Series has lived to see another year. And Undertaker, as long as he's not injured, should be able to celebrate his 20-year anniversary at the very same event that he debuted at back in 1990. So hopefully he'll have an opportunity to do that. I remember that Survivor Series, actually. It was Ted DiBiase's mystery partner. So let's open up the mailbag here and get to your questions. A lot of them this week. Ryan writes in, Solomon, sir, to be fair, Eli Cottonwood has been his name since FCW. Well, that doesn't make it right. They could have changed it. They didn't. It's a shitty name. Brett writes in, Dear Solomonster, ideas for the WWE Network, as far as shows are concerned. Of course, there's Santino's Casa. which of course you stole from WWE.com, but that's okay. Let's see here. The making of a WWE film, not really interested in that. JR's blog and breakdown of talent, well, that kind of probably would get boring after a while. What? Steve Austin tweets. Now, that's a winner right there. That's the best idea I've heard. That would be phenomenal. I don't know how many of you follow Steve Austin on Twitter, but he's definitely the second most interesting person in all of Twitter to follow after, you know, me, of course. And his tweets are just... If I'm him, I put together a book of tweets and put out a couple of volumes. It's hilarious. I don't know how it started. He's got this gimmick where basically he kind of chases sharks. And he'll come up with some of these ridiculous stories. And remember, on Twitter, you only have 140 characters to say your piece. So there'll be a series of 25 tweets going down the page about a story about how these sharks were following him and he had to take a detour down the road just to, you know, swerve to get away from them. And then the sharks jumped out of the car and they tried to shoot him and they only grazed him in the arm. And then he came back with a machete and chased after them. But they were, you know, walking around in their fins and then they rolled down a hill into a ditch and he had to go after them. And just great stuff. Austin's great. I would definitely watch that show. And then let's see what else Brett has here. Vintage beating of Michael Cole. Well, I could watch that. As a matter of fact, the Steve Austin beatdown of Michael Cole from 2001. I could watch that all day long. And Jillian Hall sings Hall & Oates. Yeah, I don't think so. That would be a desecration if she were to do that. Got a letter from a new listener here that really made my week, and I just wanted to share on the air and give him some credit as well. This comes from Jack from Northern Ireland. Dear Solid Monster, I just felt like I needed to write to you to thank you. Recently came across SE Scoops by accident when I was Googling about the whole Batista situation, and I'm happy to say that it has reinvigorated my interest in wrestling. I'm 17 years old and was a massive fan of the WWF in my childhood, but then sort of stopped watching when The Rock took leave and the product began turning a bit stale. I've now recently started watching WWE again, and while it has faded massively from its glory days, I'm starting to get back into it. I streamed your latest podcast from the website, and I felt I had to tell you how brilliant it is. I love how you speak your mind, no bullshitting attitude you have with regards to presenting your opinions, and I find your humorous delivery of your passion for wrestling contagious. Wow. I've now added SE Scoops to my tabs bar, and you have gained yourself another avid listener. Well, thank you, Jack. I really, I do appreciate that. He does have a question here, which is kind of what I was getting to. In my short time of watching WWF, my favorite match would have to be the street fight between Triple H and Cactus Jack at the 2000 Royal Rumble at MSG. I believe that was also my favorite pay-per-view of all time. Solid Monster, what are your opinions on this? Well, Triple H and Cactus Jack had their best match at that Royal Rumble pay-per-view. I thought their Hell in a Cell match, which came the month after that at No Way Out, was good, but not great. And the ending was somewhat overwhelming, to say the least. The way that pinfall just came out of nowhere and, you know, Cactus's career was quote-unquote over, you know, for all of 4 weeks anyway. But that match at the Garden was just great stuff. And there was drama. You know, Triple H about midway through cut his leg on a wooden pallet on the outside and his leg was pretty messed up. And, you know, he gutted it out. It was just a great brawl. You know, it was a different time and age in WWE. I think if they had that match on pay-per-view now, the Mattel folks, their heads would explode. It's just the way things used to be compared to the way they are now. You know, handcuffing Cactus Jack during the match, and then The Rock made a very brief cameo to hit Triple H with a chair, and then Mick, you know, of course, at the end of the match, in the middle of the match, they actually introduced the barbed wire 2x4, which may have been the first time that WWE ever used anything with the barbed wire in one of their matches, borrowing a page, one of many pages, from the old ECW. And the end of the match, of course, only Cactus would be stupid enough to do this. Thousands of thumbtacks on the canvas, gets backdropped onto them. That's fine. Gets pedigreed, kicks out, the crowd goes nuts. The only thing I'm sorry about is I wasn't at the Garden that night to enjoy it. And then came one of the sicker bumps any wrestler has taken in WWE, certainly any main eventer, when Triple H pedigreed Mick Foley face first down onto the thumbtacks. It gives Triple H credit too, because if I'm Triple H executing the move and I'm landing even with knee pads, I'm coming down on thumbtacks, I'm not too happy about that either. You know, both these guys looked plenty worse for the wear when that match was over. Triple H won. I don't think anybody complained at that point. Nobody, you know, that was the big bump right there. That made everybody gasp. And as I recall, Vince McMahon was very unhappy with Mick Foley when he came through the curtain. He flipped out on Mick because of that bump, and you know, you could have gone blind, a thumbtack could have gone in your eye. You know, of course, it's questionable whether Vince was actually concerned about Foley's physical well-being or if he was just concerned about, you know, the way his company would be viewed if one of his wrestlers were blind, or blinded, I should say. But great match. Great match. That whole pay-per-view was great. That actually, from top to bottom, is one of my favorite Royal Rumbles of all time as well. The way it started with Taz making his debut. Taz was... That was his highlight, unfortunately. It was his debut. He never quite soared to those heights again before he retired and became an announcer, but the place exploded. They knew exactly who he was when he came out, throwing Kurt Angle around all over the place, putting him in the choke. The place goes nuts. That was good stuff. I could do without memories of Mae Young stripping down in the bikini contest or whatever the hell it was. I think they had said that it was fake boobs, like a prosthetic that they used. I'm not too sure of that. Either way, it was just completely gross and disgusting. The Royal Rumble match itself, as I recall, was quite a comeback Rumble, because I was not too fond of the 1998 or 99 Rumble matches. 98, for whatever reason, that's the first one, actually the second one, Austin one, it didn't do it for me. And 99 was just a complete debacle in that it was strictly about Austin McMahon and furthering that storyline, which is fine, but you want to have, you know, you want the Royal Rumble to mean more. You want other people to have kind of their moment in the sun. And that didn't happen, and then Vince McMahon, of all people, won. I just hated that Rumble. And that was also the Rumble where The Rock killed Mick Foley dead with a steel chair in front of his family. And that, you know, when the match happened, I didn't know his family was at ringside. I realized that when Beyond the Mat came out, but I remember watching that and just, even just watching it after the sixth or seventh chair shot, and The Rock, you could tell, was just wailing away, probably because Mick told him to, made me feel uncomfortable. And that was back in 99. So 2000, the Rumble match was actually really good. There were a couple of funny spots in there. I remember Rikishi and Too Cool were in there. The Rumble basically stopped at one point so they can do their dance, and then Rikishi threw both of them out. Kai and Tai got eliminated. They kept coming out and getting thrown out of the ring, and at one point, Taka Michinoku got launched, I think by Bradshaw, over the top rope and landed. He did a flip, I think, and landed face first on the ground, and I think he dislocated his shoulder or something. He got pretty fucked up on that bump. So yeah, top to bottom, big fan of the 2000 Royal Rumble. Good stuff. You have good taste, my friend, and welcome back, and I do appreciate the kind words. I want to thank everybody who emailed me links. I had a whole bunch of you after I said last week that I had looked for years. It was kind of, you know, it was kind of like womp womp. I said that I had looked for years, and within a matter of minutes, I got links from people saying, oh, it's right here on YouTube. The clip of Kane's Katie Vick promo from 2002, and you know, it's one of those things where I saw it once years ago, and I haven't really seen it since. And I mentioned last week, this, you know, in recanting the story about how, or not recanting, but retelling the story that, you know, Kane said that he had a swerve to avoid a squirrel. I listened to the promo. He never says squirrel. He never mentions a squirrel at all in that story. It's an animal. They kept it vague. An animal jumped out in front of the car and they swerved. I don't know where squirrel came from. Maybe I was thinking of Sid Vicious. You can look that story up too if you want to. But thank you for sending those links. The promo was as awful as I remembered it being. One of the worst Kane promos you'll ever see. One of the worst storylines you'll ever see. If it were a movie, it would win a Razzie Award. Craig in Idaho writes in, talking about a WWE best promo DVD as an idea. He says, I would love to watch the best of the best collection of promos from current and past times. There have been some great ones by many great wrestlers, and I think a collection of those is far overdue. What do you think? Well, I don't know that I personally would want to sit here for 2 hours, let's say, or 3 hours, and just watch promos. There have been plenty of entertaining promos over the years, don't get me wrong, but I could just look them up on YouTube and watch them. I don't have to sit here and spend $20 or $30 on a DVD to watch promos for 3 hours. If I wanted to sit here and watch promos for 3 hours, or 2 hours, or what have you, I would just watch Raw, which I do plenty of as it is. But I am happy that they're coming out with a Chris Jericho DVD in September. This guy has been to the company since 1999. He's one of the best performers they have, bona fide main eventer for most of his run. Truly one of the best in the world at what he does, to steal a phrase from him. And he's never gotten a DVD. I mean, think of all the people that have gotten DVD treatments before him. John fucking Morrison got a DVD a couple of months ago. Every other main eventer has multiple DVDs. Steve Austin's had about three. Triple H has had a couple. Undertaker has another DVD coming out. Kane even got a DVD. Kane got a DVD. The coffee-fearing Kane. Kurt Angle. Brock Lesnar. I think maybe Big Show hasn't gotten a DVD. Which is fine. I'm sure the content of a Chris Jericho DVD, all due respect to Big Show, will be far more entertaining, but... Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. If not a purchase, I don't want to say a download. It's a purchase. Let's put it that way. Hell, even the Macho Man got a DVD before Chris Jericho. What the hell is up with that? Ash writes in, Dear Solid Monster, listeners since episode 50. Again, I ask you all when you write in if you could just mention if you know since what episode or around what episode you've been listening. Throw that in the email, but... Ash writes in two quick questions. How and when did the What Chants originally start? They are of course, the bane of my existence. Even I think I talked about this at the WUW Independent Show I was at in May when I was invited into the ring to do a little promo work of my own. I was whatted by the end of my promo, which was kind of like my initiation. I felt truly as though I were part of the wrestling community. It's almost like a rite of passage to be whatted by the crowd. But it is the bane of my existence. I hate that fucking chant. And really, it ruined wrestling promos for 10 years. I'm sure that was not Steve Austin's intent. As far as how it originally started, it started when Austin was the heel leader of the Alliance back in 2001. But the story behind it is him and Christian were buddies. And as the story is told, Austin would sometimes leave voicemail messages, I think, for Christian on his phone. And would say what's, and it started as a little thing between him and Christian off camera that he just started incorporating into promos on TV, and unfortunately, it caught on. Question number two, why doesn't WWE do Fatal 4-Way Elimination matches at the pay-per-view instead of having them straight one pinfall to a finish matches? Well, that's just not the way WWE does things. They don't do three-way dances, and they don't like that, and they don't do Fatal 4-Way matches like that. What the hell are you going to do? It's just their philosophy on how those matches are done. Other companies have a different perspective on it, and they do things their own way. Ant writes in, Ant, that is, with a letter. And just to answer his PS here, he has a WrestleMania story to tell. Is it too late to send it in? It's never too late to send it in. Feel free to email it over to me. I did read your entire email here. I don't have time to go through the whole thing here. He's talking about pay-per-views and trying to make them feel more special. And basically the question is this. To give more of a WrestleMania-type feel for other events, we have the Rumble, of course, and the Elimination Chamber, all building to the big one. It seems to work each year, so maybe they should set other journeys to pay-per-views like that. For example, have the April and May pay-per-view shows for free, and then have two events in June and July that build to SummerSlam. Then they could scrap September and October events with the now-returning Survivor Series in November, beginning the road to the Rumble and back to the start again. That way it cuts a few pay-per-views away and gives people time to digest. So essentially the idea is what I talked about before. Just get rid of a couple of pay-per-views so that you can have more time to build. I mean, look at the build to Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania this year. They started it in December. They planted the seed at the Slammy Awards. And I know the pay-per-view didn't do too well, but I'm not going to put that on Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. They promoted the hell out of that match better than any match in years. So, when you have more time to dedicate, not 3 fucking weeks, I mean, look at this Fatal 4-Way abomination coming up next weekend. Especially now with the NXT stuff, those Fatal 4-Way matches could not feel any less important. It feels like, much like Hell in a Cell in October, they're doing it because they have to. Because, oh shit, you know, we created this stupid pay-per-view concept that now we have to have Fatal 4-Way matches, even though there's really no point. I mean, in October, did they really have to have 3 Hell in a Cell matches? No. I mean, they had to because they called the pay-per-view Hell in a Cell. That's why I'm not a fan of these gimmick shows. But absolutely, I mean, you can pluck at least 2 or 3. I mean, if they don't want to go back to the old 5 pay-per-views per year model, which is never going to happen, And they've cut one or two shows away. They have done that. You know, they eliminated the Cyber Sunday concept as a pay-per-view. They got rid of New Year's Revolution. You know, I applaud them for that, but it's not enough. There's still 13, I believe, shows each year and only 12 months in a calendar year. That's too many shows. Cut a few of them out, and you don't even have to build everything up as WrestleMania. There's only one WrestleMania. SummerSlam is kind of like the WrestleMania of the summer. But just get rid of some of the in-between events. Start building main event matches, let's say for SummerSlam. Start building them in May. You know, begin the build in May, which by now is too late. But I think that would definitely make the events feel more special, and it would boost pay-per-view buy rates a little bit. I mean, they're getting their asses handed to them by UFC. UFC has another pay-per-view tonight, which I think they'll actually do. If I had to take a guess, I know they have the Iceman, Chuck Liddell, fighting tonight. I think he's on his last legs. He's fighting Rich Franklin. I believe it's UFC 115. Compared to the most recent show that had, you know, Quentin Rampage Jackson fighting Rashad Evans, that show did between 900,000 and 1 million pay-per-view buys. And don't get me started on the fact they had a bona fide pay-per-view draw in Quentin Jackson, and they did what they did with him last week. Nonetheless, this show I don't see doing quite as well, but these UFC pay-per-views, even the ones that don't quote-unquote do so well, they're still at least tripling the buy rates that WWE shows do, you know? Now, UFC, in fairness, they have a lot more pay-per-views than they used to, and they're kind of guilty of the same thing. They have a lot of shows. They could probably benefit by not having as many, quite frankly. But they make up for it by really building their matches with these countdown shows. They make up for that. So they can have a pay-per-view within 3 weeks of each other. They can have two shows within 3 weeks, and they'll still do 500,000 buys or more because they promoted those matches, so well. The problem with WWE is most of the time, they do a piss-poor job of promoting the matches, and they only have 3 weeks. So they have nothing going for them. And this Fatal 4-Way number, it's going to be bad. It's definitely going to be bad. But could they cut shows? Absolutely. John writes in, Dear Solomonster, what do you think of Kane's new dominatrix tights? Oh, Christ, I don't need to hear dominatrix and Kane in the same sentence. Moving on. Norma writes into the podcast, Dear Solomonster, when WWE creates their own cable channel, to what availability do you think it will be to the people? Like basic cable, premium, or what? It's not going to be, well, I mean, MLB Network for baseball and the NFL Network, I guess they would be considered premium channels. Those channels are definitely not freely available like USA Network would be, or TBS or something. And believe me, WWE Network will not be basic cable, even though they would love for it to be. It would likely be a premium channel. That would be my guess. I don't know how the whole model works. It's going to be an uphill battle. I mean, they still have not cleared Time Warner Cable here in New York, which is the largest cable company, maybe even in the country, not just here. They have not cleared WWE 24/7 with them. And 24/7 has been operating since 2004, or maybe 2005. Cablevision. I mean, my current cable company didn't pick up 24/7 until 2 or 3 years after it started, which just drove me nuts, and I'm happy to have it now. If you live in Manhattan, though, if you actually live in the city, you have Time Warner Cable, and you're pretty much fucked if you want 24/7, and it's not available via satellite or dish. So if you have DirecTV or Dish Network, you can't get it either. So you really kind of have no options. But as hard as it's been for them to get those cable clearances for their on-demand channel, imagine how much more infinitely difficult it's going to be for them to convince these cable companies to carry their full 24-hour channel as a basic cable channel. I don't see that happening. Tyler writes in, Dear Solomonster, I'm a huge fan of the Sound Off, avid listener since episode 40. Week after week, I hear you say the WWE title belts, quote, don't mean shit, end quote. In fact, I did say that earlier in this very show. We all know that there are too many title belts in WWE right now, but what would you do in order to restore some of the former luster to them without eliminating any of the current belts? Well, first of all, it's actually better right now than it was years ago. Think about this. Think about the Attitude Era, which was a great era, don't get me wrong, but you had the WWE Championship. You had the Intercontinental Championship. You had the Tag Team Championship. You had the European Championship. You had the Hardcore Championship. And you had the Women's Championship. That's too many titles. They don't have the European belt anymore. They don't have the Hardcore title anymore. Entertaining as it was, it's gone, which is a good thing. The problem is you have now something that you did not have all those years ago, which is the brand split. And you have to have titles on both brands. Me, personally, I probably would just end the brand split, but again, not going to happen. So you kind of need to have, you know, they have like the Intercontinental title on SmackDown, the U.S. title on Raw. To me, the U.S. title doesn't mean shit. I'm perfectly fine with doing away with the U.S. title altogether. But if your question is, what would I do without eliminating the belts, how about not having any world title matches on free TV? How about saving them for pay-per-views exclusively? How about that? How about having a world title match at the Royal Rumble? Having one at WrestleMania? Having one at SummerSlam? Having one at the Survivor Series, unless you do a War Games main event, which I think would be even better. And have one at one of the pay-per-views in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam, at least one of them. And in the interim, you build them up. Ergo, the title is not changing as often, which is the other thing I would do. I would cut back on all the title changes. It's just ridiculous. I mean, the title changes hands like nothing. And it doesn't mean anything. You know, John Cena could be a very effective world champion as a 3-time world champion instead of having now been a 9-time world champion. So the frequency with which these belts change has to be cut down, without question. And again, I would save world title matches for pay-per-view. I'd also merge the world titles and have one undisputed traveling world champion like they did for a time back in 2002. So those are some of the changes I would make, and I think that would help a lot. I've advocated a ranking system before. A lot of people got really excited. You know, they had a thrill running up and down their leg when Eric Bischoff first announced this TNA ranking system and all this. Oh, Solomonster, see, they're going to implement a ranking system. You should be happy. And of course, they've all but abandoned it. It's a joke. It was a joke from the beginning. It's not going to happen. If I was to do a ranking system, a power ranking system, if you will, if you're going to have two world titles, you should have a top 10 for each world title. For every other belt, you have a top 5. And you try as much as you possibly can to stay tried and true to those rankings. You can have matches every now and then, promoted as a main event on Raw, where the number 2 contender for the world title on Raw is going to have a match, let's say, with the number 4 contender. And if the number 4 contender beats the number 2 contender, then he leapfrogs into the number 2 spot, and the other guy gets bumped down by 2. At least then, when these people get title shots, it would make sense. Does it make any sense to you when Raw goes on the air, and random guy number 1 walks out and says, "I want a title shot," and John Cena, whose motto is, "Never give up," comes out and says, "Okay, I'll give you a title match." What? Since when did it become that easy to get a world championship match? It doesn't make sense. So at least having some sort of ranking system like that would at least, it would make things make more sense. I don't think that's really asking too much. So anyway, those are some of the without eliminating any belts, those are some of the ideas that they could very easily do on their own, and they choose not to. And therefore, their belts don't mean shit. And let's see here. Gail writes in, has not written in a while. In episode 84, I mentioned something about WWE creating a new title belt to replace the spinner belt. Have I gotten any updates on the story? And if so, do I know what type of belt they are thinking of creating? I actually have not heard anything about that new title belt. That was a report that went around, seemed to be a legit one, and nothing really ever came from it. You know, the talk at the time was that the spinner belt, which doesn't spin anymore, they took that spinning mechanism out actually a couple of years ago. But it's such a gaudy looking belt. And there are people, I mean, with John Cena by now, that belt has become synonymous with him. It actually fits him. But when somebody like Triple H is holding that belt, it just looks completely out of place. Or Sheamus. It just looks completely out of place. I think it's time for a new belt. I really do. But I honestly, I just have not heard. I'll look into this, but I just, I believe it was Dave Millican who has created the belts for them before, who would be the person probably creating any new championship belts. I know he has a website, So we'll see. I'll look into it and see. But I have not heard anything, and certainly, you know, look, the look of the belts is the least of their problems, but still, I think it's time we get a new world title. I think the Intercontinental Championship, quite frankly, needs a facelift as well. I didn't see anything wrong with the way the old belt was. In fact, I thought it looked beautiful. Why they had to change everything, I don't know. But, yeah, no, have not heard anything new. And right now, we are stuck with the spinner belt, which doesn't spin. So I guess it's just a belt. So that's it. That's it. Cinching up the mailbag here. That does it for this particular edition of the podcast. As always, I want to thank you all for spending an hour and 5 minutes so far with me. Facebook. We are on Facebook now. The official Solomonster page. You know, you'll see the name on there as The Solomonster, but you can just go to facebook.com/TheSolomonster, just like TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. So hit me up on Facebook, send a friend request, and you can follow along with everybody else on there. We've already got a community of well over 70, going on 80 people. I think that first night I created the page and posted about it on Twitter, I woke up the next morning and had like 50 friend requests. I felt so special. So definitely check that out and get on there. As always, twitter.com/Solomonster for any live blog thoughts, updates, and stuff like that. On the off days when there is no podcast, that's the best way to follow along. And you can download this show very easily through the iTunes Music Store. It is free. And whenever there's a show, you'll be the first to get it. You don't have to do anything. It'll automatically download for you, as I understand it. So there you go. That's how you keep in touch with the podcast. We're all over social media now. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on iTunes. We're on the moon, from what I understand as well. They listen to us on the moon. I don't know who's up there, but we have signal that kind of goes to the, you know, the anyway. Going to try to do another show next week. I make no guarantees. It's going to be a really hectic weekend. I can guarantee you there won't be a new show next Saturday. Sometimes I do them on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday. Saturday, I'm actually working opening day for a team that's a client. I'll be booked. Unlike Dennis Stamp, I'll be booked all day. And then Sunday, I'll try to do a show. I make no guarantees. I'm going to be leaving somewhat early to head over for the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. But if not, you know, I'll mention it on the Twitter page, and you can keep up with everything on there and on Facebook. So whatever episode 113 may be out, I do hope you all download it and join me here. Support the website, as always, sescoops.com. Be well, stay safe, and to WWE on the Bryan Danielson stuff, I give to you this classic ECW quote, "You fucked up."
You've been listening to The Solomonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.